Welcome to the Compassionate Leaders Circle podcast. For thousands of years, the sages have known that compassion is a powerful force for good. In the last two decades, compassion scholars caught up with these sages, proving that there is an ROI to building loving communities and businesses. This podcast features leaders who can teach us about the power of compassion. Scott Shoot, welcome to the Compassionate Leaders Circle podcast. I'm so honored to have you, so excited to catch up with you. Scott is the head of mindfulness and compassion at LinkedIn. He's also an author, and he's so much more, including my friend. And I'm just excited to have you today to catch up on compassionate leadership and your book.
Yay, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And the book is called The Full Body Yes, Change Your Work and Your World from the Inside Out, which we're going to dive into because I loved the book. Why don't you tell me and my audience a little bit about what you're up to at LinkedIn? I think when we met a couple years ago, you were just embarking on this journey.
Yeah.
Passionate leadership. And there's so sure. many things that you're doing. So I'd love to hear.
Maybe shall I give the background on how this even happened? Because that's what people want to know.
Yeah. That'd be great.
Yeah. So my background is as an executive. I led customer operations at LinkedIn for 6 years. And that's been most of my career is leading customer service and customer facing organizations. And I got to LinkedIn about 8.5 years ago. And a couple of years in, you know, while running this organization, I realized, wow, what a cool place. Right? What a really open place. Our CEO at the time, Jeff Weiner, was talking about compassion in leadership. He was talking about his own meditation practice, you know, using Headspace. And I thought, wow, maybe this is a place where I can bring my own practice because I'm a dual agent, right? I have this part of me, which is, you know, leading a big organization. But the other part is I'm a seeker. I'm a spiritual student. And I've had a practice since I was 13. I've been teaching since I was in college. It's a huge part of my life, but one that I'd been covering, you know, not really talking about in the workplace. But I got to LinkedIn. It was such an amazing place. Like, wow, maybe I can bring something. And I started just by leading one meditation session, you know, on a Thursday afternoon at 4:30. And it was terrifying. And the first time, it was terrifying because I didn't know what people were going to think of me, right? What does this mean for my brand and all this other kind of ego and fear stuff? And the first time there was one guy there, and I'm sure that he was just as terrified as I was. I never saw that guy again, you know, and then the next week there were three, and then there were five, and then it turned into a regular thing. And then I raised my hand to be the executive sponsor of our mindfulness program. We didn't really have one. And so myself with a bunch of volunteers kind of created this program. And I volunteered like that for 3 or 4 years. And then for me, the tipping point was about a couple of years ago, 2 or 3 years ago now, Jeff Weiner, our CEO, gave the commencement address at Wharton. And he talked about compassion. You know, your one big piece of advice in a commencement address, right? And he said, look, if you're going to be successful in life, successful at work, be compassionate. And I thought, well, that's a big deal because he had talked about compassion in, let's say, safer environments like Wisdom 2.0. But this was Wharton, right, at the business school. And, you know, then the next 2 or 3 times he's on TV, that's all the reporters want to talk about is compassion. And so I raised my hand and I approached Jeff and I made a pitch and I'm like, hey, look, it's awesome that we're out in the world talking about compassion. But if we send 16,000 employees back to their desk with this message that that's the most important thing they can do, like, what does that mean? Because we're not doing anything about it. And so I made this pitch, and with his support and the head of HR support, we essentially created this role that I'm in now, which is the head of mindfulness and compassion programs. I'm happy to dive into what exactly that means, but that's how we got there.
Well, when we talked a couple of years ago, you were just starting. So I'd love to hear more about what are the tangible programs you're running and what the impact is.
Sure. So there are two parts of my job, mainstream mindfulness and operationalized compassion. So let's start with the mindfulness piece. We want to mainstream it, meaning think of it like mental exercise as a corollary to physical exercise, right? Every company that cares about their employees, it's a certain size, you know, offers physical things like a gym, or, you know, it's totally fine if at 5 o'clock you go for a run in the afternoon, but it's still not quite commonplace or mainstream for people to do mindfulness, to do meditation. And so that's what we're trying to get to. So we offer regular kind of weekly meditation sessions, something like, I don't know, 40, 50, 60 of these a week, all over the world, you know, in our gyms, you know, just like a gym will hire somebody to do yoga or TRX. Now they hire people to do meditation classes as well. So we have those. We have these drop-in classes, like community groups that we partner with the folks at Wisdom Labs to bring. It's called Wise at Work. And those are really nice because it allows us to scale really easily. So if I have a volunteer in Omaha or Bangalore or Chicago or anywhere, all they have to do is get people in the room, you know, and it's a 5 to 8 minute recorded talk on something, another 5 to 8 minute practice, and then it's discussion. Right, so it's like having a book club or a you know, men's group or a catechism or whatever, this community group. And those are beautiful. We also do, we have a 30-day challenge every year, and we use the app Wise at Work from our friends at Wisdom Labs. And that's beautiful because it allows us to talk about it at the company level because it's a company-wide event. So within the 30 days, the challenge is, hey, meditate 20 times. In other words, use the app 20 times. And if you do, you get a hoodie. And never underestimate the power of a free t-shirt or a free hoodie.
Hoodie, that's exciting. I love that idea.
Yeah. We had, I can tell you, we had a lot of people join when it was a hoodie.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm in.
Exactly. And then we have things like mini retreats if somebody wants to go deeper. So, you know, once a quarter or so on a Friday afternoon, we'll go for 2 or 3 hours and introduce a whole bunch of different types of practices. So it's just creating this kind of steady drip of activities and just making it normal. I've even led sessions, you know, at our company All Hands. You know, we did a 90-second practice at company All Hands with whatever, 8 or 10 or 12,000 people. So we're just trying to mainstream it.
Amazing.
That's what's going on.
By the way, I just want to pause and say bravo. Thank you, LinkedIn. Thank you, Scott Shute, for walking your talk and helping, you know, your employees. It's amazing.
Yeah. And then, so that's the mindfulness piece. And because we don't work or live in isolation, you know, so mindfulness about ourselves, but then compassion, oh man, that's where I think the juice is, right? Especially in business. So compassion is how we work with others and interact with others. And so I think compassion is, I have a definition for it. It's, you know, building the capacity to, one, have awareness of others. Two is have a mindset of wishing the best for them. And then three is the courage to take action. And this happens at the individual level, at the team level, and at the company level. And so when we talk about operationalizing compassion, you know, part of my job, I'm not saying I've created LinkedIn into a compassionate place. LinkedIn was already a compassionate place. And my job is kind of like an investigative reporter to figure out how did we get here? And essentially, hopefully write the playbook so that we LinkedIn stay amazing as a place to work, but also to write the playbook for others to follow. And so here's the type of thing that I mean. We do workshops and that sort of thing. But when we talk about operationalizing, I'll give a couple examples. So as an example, in sales, our head of sales will stand in front of all the sales team, you know, 5,000, 6,000 people at sales kickoff and say things like, hey, look, we are in it as salespeople to provide long-term value. So at the end of the day, at the end of the quarter, don't sell something our customers don't need just so you can hit your quota. And I'm looking at this going, wow, seriously? Like this is not how I was taught as a 25-year-old salesperson.
That was not your playbook.
No. Or in product, you know, if somebody comes to product exec, one of the product managers, and they're pitching, hey, here's what the next rev of our product is going to do. And if it goes something like, oh, hey, by doing this, we'll increase clicks or engagement by 12%. The first question is always, yeah, but okay, how's the member experience? And if the answer is, well, hey, did I mention it was 12% more clicks? Like the meeting just stops. Right? It just stops. It's like, okay, now this turns into an object lesson about our number one value, which is members first. And so anytime we're moving, I think, from me thinking to we, this has compassion at its roots. And we can ingrain these things in a really easy way. It's part of our values as a company, but it has compassion at the roots of it. So part of it is, I'm trying to highlight those things. I'm trying to codify those things and ultimately, hopefully write, you know, the book or the playbook on how to do it for others.
It's a beautiful mission and we're on a similar path. And I love your definition of compassion. It's so powerful. I've been thinking a lot about compassion in organizations as having three types of compassion, self-compassion, vulnerability, and compassion for others. And I found that your book demonstrated that so beautifully. And
thank you.
One of the many reasons I enjoyed your book was it felt like a meditation. You even had us breathing in the book. So thank you for helping me breathe. I was reading it as I was coming out of a very bad reaction from my second COVID shot. So
I felt
like it was very healing.
Good. I'm glad I could be of service.
It was very personal. And I feel like I know you so well, and I learned so many things about you, and I appreciate you being so generous with your life and your family and your journey. It's a great way to become a better leader because you lay out, you know, four ways to practice this, change your work and your world from the inside out. So it's so many things. And I loved all the personal stories. I actually appreciate Scott. From the book, I learned that he has a music background. He's been an athlete and a coach. He's a golfer. And I always talk about my family's spiritual path being golf because my mom and dad met in a golf course. And nice. I talked to my dad today because my dad started golfing when he was a caddy in Chicago when he was 10. And he had two holes in one.
Wow.
Both in his 80s.
Wow.
So amazing. I would like us to start with your story of the hole in one experience for you.
Well, this was in 2015. And it was in this time of my life, my dad had passed away about 6 months before that. And I'm the youngest of five. And I spent my entire childhood and probably most of my adult life trying to achieve so that I probably wasn't conscious of it, but unconsciously to get the attention of my father, because he'd always been such a big part of my life. And then he was gone, right? And then there was nobody to give me those attaboys, so nobody to look up to. And at the time, my boss at work was, you know, I was running a big business and nobody was paying attention to me, and it was fine. But I didn't have anybody to go to at work either. And the person in my spiritual life who I rely on to be my mentor, she was no longer available to me either. So I was in this place where, you know, I was kind of 45 and realized that there's nobody to go to. Like, I'm the top of my own food chain, which is a very strange place to be if you've grown up kind of looking for outside validation. And so this was the context in my life of like having to be my own port in a storm. And so, in golf, my son was on the school golf team during this time, during high school. He was in high school. And we would play a couple times a week. And I have never played by myself. Like, I've always either played with him or maybe at a work event. I probably played by myself maybe 10 years before that. But on this Sunday afternoon, I was waiting for my son to come home so we could go play. And when he came home, he was grouchy and tired and didn't want to go. But I'd been waiting and I was ready. So I went. I played by myself. And it's late Sunday afternoon, and I have the whole place to myself. Literally, there's nobody ahead of me. There's nobody behind me. And I get to the third hole. It's this little par three, 126 yards. And then this place, it's beautiful. It's down by a little creek, and the sunlight was streaming through the trees, and there's foxes around and different wildlife and birds. And I just felt this sense of calm, this sense of connection to something bigger than myself. You know, I take my shot, I hit it, and I hit it pretty well. And I can't see the hole because there's a bunker in front of it, but it was on line with the hole. And all of a sudden, I just knew, like, this is what I call the full body yes. I just knew. I knew it had gone in the hole, which means it was my first hole in one. And I was there completely alone. Now, if this had happened with my son, with my friends, of course, there'd be high-fiving and dancing and, you know, celebrating and pictures. And then for the next 3 or 4 days, I'd be telling the story again and again and again. And all of that would be reflected back to me, right? I'd be living in other people's experiences. I'd be experiencing it through the reflection, through outside validation. But in this case, I got this inner voice, this inner nudge, like, this is just for you. Like, how do you want to feel about this? And I was thinking, oh, of course this is how it happens, right? This thing that I'm going to achieve, this hole in one, of course, this is how my life works. And so I had, you know, 126 yards to walk to the hole and have this kind of inner dialogue with something deeper. Like, no, like, yes, if you had had this experience in another way, it would have been different, but this is just for you. How do you want to feel about it? And of course I get up there and I look in the hole and of course my ball is in the hole, you know, and I snap a picture of it and text it to my son and, and that was it. But it was this feeling of, I'm in this transition. And why did it take me so long to get to this place where I'm living for myself? Why does it matter what anybody else thinks about anything that I do, right? I'd spent my whole life looking for external validation, when your own strength, my own strength, comes from doing what I do and then just letting it go and doing it for me. So it was a super powerful experience for me.
Well, thank you for telling the story so beautifully. I was intrigued when I saw the cover that there was an orange rhinoceros on there. And we're not going to tell that story because that's going to be the big reveal when you read the book.
Oh, that's right.
You need to understand. So that was a delightful surprise to get to that. But talk to me more about this concept of the full body yes and why it's important and how do we develop it if we're interested in that idea?
I think the full body yes for me is when you just have a deep sense of knowing, right? Where every atom, every part of you, not just your mind, but your body and your emotions and whatever your mental model is for that deepest part of you is all aligned and says yes or no, whatever. It's alignment. And this can happen simply, like you're reaching for the breakfast cereal versus a yogurt or whatever, and you just know which one you want to eat. And that's fine. That it happens there too. But I think it's most poignant when it's something we've been struggling over, right? These big decisions in our life, to take a job or leave a job, to start a relationship or end a relationship, to move or not to move, these really big life decisions. And we struggle and we struggle and we struggle. And then for me, a lot of times it will happen. And it will happen when I'm really, like if I'm in contemplation and meditation, I'll just get it. I'll just get that full body yes. You know, one time I was trying to decide whether to take a job, actually the job at LinkedIn. So this is 8 or 9 years ago. And on paper, it didn't seem right. Like I didn't want to do it on paper. I had a great job. I loved everything about my job. This new job was going to seem like, honestly, it looked like more work for less money. And like, why would I do this? I'd been through like 5 or 6 rounds of interviews. And then I woke up one night at 1:30 in the morning, just wide awake. Like it was full daylight. It wasn't, but I was wide awake and I just knew. I'm like, I'm supposed to do this. I'm supposed to take this job. And I didn't sleep for the rest of the night. I was just kind of like laying there for 4 or 5 hours, just in this kind of state of knowing. And then that was it. My inner decision was made. And so sometimes it just kind of comes over me. And then sometimes I kind of have to work for it.
Well, I would argue you have been working for it for a long time because your spiritual practices started when you were very young. And my experience of the full body yes, or whatever you want to call it, is I think it comes with practice of figuring out how to listen to yourself, right? Yeah. So for some people, that's meditation. For other people, my dad, it's golf. Yeah. For other people, I have clients that find that voice when they're driving.
Yeah.
I have clients, you know, just taking more days off, you know, getting rest. So I'm very interested in how you bring these concepts with you and help other people, whether it's at work or I know you're out in the world. I see that you're going to speak at the Social Venture Circle. I'm very excited about that. So I guess I want to go back, Scott.
Sure.
Tell me where the book came from and the process of writing it, because you actually finished the book during COVID, right?
That's right. I've been thinking about writing a book for 20 years. Like I've always, maybe even in high school, like one of the things I thought I would do as a high schooler would be a writer, but I wanted something more practical. So I got an engineering degree. But I've always known that I would write a book, but every time I sat down to do it, it wasn't there. And I was coming home from an event with Soren from Wisdom 2.0. We were doing an event together. This is in December of 2019. And he's driving, I'm in the passenger seat, and he gets this funny look on his face. And he looks over at me, he says, "The universe has told me to tell you that it's time to write your book."
I'm so glad I asked that question. That's amazing.
I kind of checked in internally, like, does that feel, and it felt right. I'm like, okay, fine. And he's like, "I can introduce you to some editors." I'm like, fine. So he introduced me to some editors, interviewed them. I found one I liked. And then they worked with me to get to an outline stage. And then it was time to write. And when it was time to write, it happened exactly at the time that all the COVID shutdown happened. And so for me, my process was, I essentially traded commuting time in the morning for meditating and writing time. So every day I'd force myself to get up when I would normally get up to commute. I'd go outside under my big California oak tree, and do my thing. And then I'd come in and immediately before email, before phone, before anything, I would write. And so it comes from this really pure place. It comes from this really like the deepest part of me. And it just spilled out. Like I was done in 10 weeks, you know, and in talking to my publisher, they said, yeah, that doesn't normally happen, but that's how it happened for me.
Wow. So I think maybe your body and mind have been working on this book for 20 years and then exactly. It all came pouring out. That's amazing. What a great story.
Exactly. So here, and I think that's exactly right. All these stories are, I mean, they're the stories of me, but look, they're the stories of all of us. But yeah, it's a story of my life. It's a story of our life. And they were ready to come out.
And I was so honored to get an advanced copy and now it's out. Is it actually out?
Not yet. May 11th.
People can get it. May 11th. Okay. Yeah. So by the time this is published, it'll be out. So, I love the process of writing and the stories underneath the writing. So from the time you started, when you thought about what you were going to write about to the time you ended, what was the alchemy? What changed?
I realized somewhere along the way that I needed to get vulnerable. And that happened pretty quickly. And when that happened, because there's all these stories about my life with like, oh, well, I can tell this one, but I'm not telling that one. And then at some point it's like, you know what? I'm telling all of them. Or you're telling a story and you only tell part of the story. And the part that's deepest and most meaningful, you leave behind the curtains. And at some point I went, you know what? I'm not leaving anything. It's all coming. And that was very freeing. And also terrifying. and I also got the full body yes, that's what needed. That's part of the energy of the book, right? So as an example, the opening story, which was not the opening story as I had it, but it's the one that the publishers encouraged me to put at the front.
Guided you to.
They guided me. With their great advice.
It's very powerful.
It's a story of me when I was 15 in my darkest time about to take my life, you know, or considering self-harm. And wow, it's been a long time since I thought about that. And for sure, I haven't had to put myself back into that place. And so for me, just writing these things and going back to the energy of where they were written or where they were experienced from has been transformational. And what I hope is that this gives other people license to be more vulnerable as well. You know, just like when Jeff Weiner, our CEO, stands on stage and talks about mindfulness, it allows all of us to then talk about mindfulness. I hope that my book and my vulnerability and my stories will give other people license to go, okay, let's talk about this stuff. And I hope that in that talking about it, we know ourselves better and we heal and we become, you know, more open and loving human beings.
What do you hope for as far as, you know, what would you like your readers to gain from it?
Oh, man. First of all, I hope that they read it, right? I think a lot of, for me, it's not about book sales. It's about impact. And so I'm finally at this point where I've sent it to, you know, a number of people as a kind of pre-reads. And the beautiful thing, here's what I'm not getting back. I'm not getting back, oh, hey, got your book. It was cool. Thanks for that. I'm not getting that. what I'm getting is like, oh my God, Scott, I need to talk to you right now. I need to talk to you about chapter 30, blah, 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 because it's touched something in them.
Yeah.
And there's about 40 or so stories. And what my hope is that each person who reads it has at least one or two stories where they're like, oh yeah, that's me. And it moves something inside of them, even just a little bit. And in that movement, we can connect. And by we, I mean, not just me and that person, but all of us together. Because like I said, it's the story of me, but it's really the story of all of us. These are the things that all of us are going through.
Well, I so appreciate, as a business leader, you're being so vulnerable and your work is vulnerable. And, you know, I've always said that life and work is really one big soup. And I hope that more and more organizations can encourage people to just be who they are and start conversations. I think it's going to be a conversation starter.
Yeah.
And I think it can help people personally, and it can help leaders, and it can help workers. And it's helped me this week get out of my, you know, I think it's helped me. It was the perfect book for me. First of all, I don't read the books too far ahead of time when I interview people because I want to be fresh, but this book has stayed with me. I could have read it a couple of months ago and had the same conversation. Hmm. And I think I appreciate you just as a leader with a big business, just sharing your realness and your family and your, you know, losses. It's just a testament to, let's just be real, you know, wherever we are, and let's just be us. And it is scary, but I appreciate you being so brave and it's so beautiful.
Thank you. I think it's time for some of this vulnerability, or kind of taking some of the veneer off of things. See, so I, just my own experience in the last year, we do the company meeting by Zoom, by video conference, like everybody else, because we're not in person. And the old days, you know, like the executives are on stage and everybody else is in the crowd. And now we're all the same. Like we're all looking at each other on Zoom, and we're not really dressed up like we were before. You're seeing, you know, the CEOs with his kids, you know, with the stuff that they've drawn on the back wall. Sometimes there's interruption by dogs or pets or crying babies or crying siblings or whoever. And it's this big leveling to say, look, we don't have to. Yes, we all play different roles in the company, but let's see each other as people first and as role second. Right? Because we're all people first. And this is what is at the heart of compassion, is being able to see each other and be aware of each other, and then wish the best for them, and then ultimately be able to take action on their behalf when needed.
Well said. And I also think that we're living in a world where there used to be leaders and followers, and thanks to things like LinkedIn, you know, the world is flat, and we're all sitting in a place where we can have influence.
Yeah, that's true.
And I like the idea of this, you know, the Zoom kind of leveled the playing field too. We have the same amount of square. We have the same amount of real estate in every meeting.
Can't tell how tall somebody is, or, you know, whatever.
Well, I've loved talking to you. I love what you're up to. I admire you. It's been such an honor to have a pioneer in compassionate leadership with me today. Tell us how we can find your book.
Sure. It's called The Full Body Yes. So you can find it at thefullbodyyes.com to find out a little bit more about me and other things that's going on. Or you can find the book wherever good books are found. And what another note I'll say is that I just finished recording the audiobook. So it'll be available in hardcover and ebook and audiobook. But a note on the audiobook is like, wow, was that an experience? You know, because some of these stories were really hard for me to write and then to have to tell them out loud. So if you want to really get the full experience, you know, get the audiobook when it's come.
But I'd highly recommend not listening to it when you're driving, because I found it a very healing, spiritual, deep book, and it may not be safe. So listen to it on the beach. That's my two cents.
Tears may be involved in certain places.
Tears, and you know, you may go into an altered state. I think More than anything, your book brought me back to magic, and I really needed some magic. I think we all do. Brought me back to stories that helped me remember that we all have access to deeper knowing, and we all have pivotal stories that remind us that there's so much more going on in the world than what's in front of us. So thank you for bringing me back to the magic. Thank you for your work, and thank you for your time today.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and truly, thank you for reading the book. I really appreciate it.
It was my honor, and it was so good.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for listening to the Compassionate Leaders podcast. You can learn more about us at CompassionateLeadersCircle.com. Please join us each week as we shine a light on compassionate leaders making a positive impact on their communities and the world.